Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Thursday, May 21st. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Sappenfield.
And I'm Noelle Swan.
Even the very wise cannot see all ends, Gandalf told Frodo in the Fellowship of the Ring. At this moment, the tendency to predict the future can be overwhelming. News is dominated by questions of when the pandemic will end, what course it will take, and what it will change. We hear the world will never be the same again, from energy use to office spaces to education. Undoubtedly, there will be change. But in his article, I Predict Your Predictions Are Wrong, The Atlantic's Yasha Monk notes how resilient humanity is. Change is a powerful force, but so is continuity. And when it comes to predicting the path of the coronavirus, the New York Times' Nicholas Kristof notes that non-experts are supremely confident in their predictions, while epidemiologists keep telling me that they don't really know much at all. The point is not to alarm, but as Mr. Kristof says, it is to start with humility. Each moment presents an opportunity to put aside fears and be guided by reason, wisdom, and humanity. That brings its own kind of certainty. Humanity will survive this pandemic, writes Mr. Monk. In its aftermath, as after so many other disasters, we will learn to thrive anew. Now, on to today's stories. First, as all 50 states begin reopening this week, leaders are weighing tough questions that go to the core of the different values Americans hold dear.
In California and across the country, pressure is on to reopen, expressed in lawsuits and protests. Over it all looms an election in November. No fewer than a dozen suits have been filed against California and Governor Gavin Newsom by gun shops, churches, businesses, and even a bride-to-be. This week, COVID-19 deaths topped 93,000 in the United States, far more than the 58,000-plus Americans who died in the Vietnam War. Marginalized and vulnerable populations are bearing the brunt. At the same time, isolation and joblessness have their own costs, among them mental health, children's welfare, and financial ruin. Unemployment stands at 14.7%, the highest rate since the Great Depression. The pandemic could lead to 75,000 additional deaths of despair, according to Well-Being Trust. Wellness experts regret that public health and the economy are being pitted against each other. The two are inextricably connected and support each other, they say. The question should be, how do we prevent the most number of people from dying from anything? Period. Says Benjamin Miller, Chief Strategy Officer of Well-Being Trust. This story was reported by Francine Kiefer in Pasadena, California, for The Monitor.
Could an agricultural crisis change how many Italians view migrants? It might at least open a window to begin to address a deep-seated distrust.
Italy has long been at the heart of Europe's debates over migration and has been markedly hostile to migrants in recent years. But that stance has been challenged amid the coronavirus pandemic. The inability to get seasonal workers from Eastern Europe during the crisis is threatening Italy's agricultural sector. So the Italian government has decided to allow some of the estimated 600,000 irregular migrants working in the sector to legalize their status with a temporary residency to prevent crops from rotting in the fields. We need to consider this as a first step for broader cultural changes in our country, says Paolo Pazzati of Oxfam Italia. In the COVID-19 era, what is needed is that no one remains invisible. But while the move is a significant step for Italy, experts say that the underlying systemic problems that make cheap, exploitable labor necessary in Italian agriculture still need to be addressed. The real problem is that the attention is only on growers' economic needs, and that hides human beings who are used as farm workers, says one sociology researcher at University of Salerno. This story was reported by Dominique Sogel in Basel, Switzerland, and Cinzia Pugioni in Rome for The Monitor.
Seeing their graduation ceremonies simply evaporate, college seniors are disappointed, but undeterred. They're finding other ways to commemorate their connections and their accomplishments.
Senior springs are typically packed with beloved traditions and emotional goodbyes as students prepare to launch into the so-called real world. But with universities shuttered due to the coronavirus pandemic, graduation ceremonies and commencement activities have been canceled, postponed, or moved online. Schools are doing their best to provide alternative ways to mark students' achievements, says Donovan Livingston, an assistant dean at Wake Forest University. One thing that's been fascinating is to see that energy universities are putting into creatively finding ways to celebrate their students, he says. Whether it's gathering notable alumni and getting them to show love and appreciation, or hosting these virtual commencement ceremonies. But for many grads, it's not the pomp and circumstance they miss, but the casual conversations, conspiratorial whispers between classmates, and accidental run-ins on the quad. I've realized it's really easy to keep in touch with friends who you know super well, says Julia Pinney, a senior at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. But the casual friends who really bring a lot of joy to life, that's really hard to replicate by Zoom. This story was reported by Lindsay McGinnis for The Monitor.
For this peripatetic travel writer, spending Ramadan isolated in her New York apartment has offered unexpected lessons in gratitude.
A year ago, Monitor's correspondent Sarah Khan welcomed the month of Ramadan by following the scent of charred meat wafting through the damp tropical air of Zanzibar. One evening, she joined a maze of locals snaking through an open-air market. The adhan, or call to prayer, rang out from nearby mosques as families drifted from stall to stall, cobbling together an iftar meal to break the fast. Soul-warming bowls of arroyo, Zanzibar's pizzas, cups of freshly pressed sugarcane juice. This year, mosques stand eerily empty, and decadent iftars in Zanzibar are a faint memory. Like everyone else, Sarah has spent the last few months adjusting to a bizarre new normal. Gone are the thrills of exploring a seemingly limitless world, replaced by the monotony of circling every corner of her very finite New York apartment. Yet even under these circumstances, she marvels at the unlikely sense of community that's emerged. People messaging her out of the blue, socially distant walks in the park with masked friends, and care packages arriving every day. Weeks in solitude have had a meditative effect, giving Sarah stretches of time to contemplate her blessings, including all the memories that have made up her Ramadan's past. This story was reported by Sarah Khan in New York for The Monitor. You can find her full first-person account in today's issue.
Around the U.S. and the world, people are finding cozy comfort in a decades-old idea, the drive-in movie.
On a recent Saturday night, vehicles spread out among three screens at the rustic TriView Drive-In in North Smithfield, Rhode Island. Flatbed trucks transform into sleeping bag forts for kids in pajamas, and attendees discover that face masks aren't impervious to the tantalizing smell of fried dough. First-timers Jill and Bill Harris brought their three children to see Pixar's Onward. "We can sit outside and talk if we want to," says Ms. Harris. "You really can't do that in the theater." The drive-in, a medium that has waned since its heyday decades ago, is suddenly at the forefront of pop culture again. Beyond the nostalgic allure of movies under the stars, innovators are looking toward the drive-in model as a way to experience live events now that people can no longer stand elbow to elbow. At least temporarily, audiences may end up in front of vast screens for concerts, sports, and even theater. "We're theater people. We're creative people," says Michael Duran, producing artistic director of BDT Stage. "We should be able to figure out a way to bring theater to the people and still be able to stay safe." This story was reported by Stephen Humphreys in North Smithfield, Rhode Island, and Milford, Massachusetts, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary on government reform among African countries from The Monitor's editorial board. Across Africa, long-delayed reforms in governance are suddenly on the table. Both the challenge of the pandemic and the prospect of the continent's first recession in over 25 years have put leaders on notice. Even before the coronavirus crisis is over, civic activists and international creditors are demanding deep reforms in badly managed regimes. In South Africa, this desire for structural change was echoed in a speech by President Cyril Ramaphosa, who also serves as the head of the 53-nation African Union. "We are resolved not merely to return our economy to where it was before the coronavirus, but to forge a new economy in a new global reality. The virus crisis is liberating many Africans to demand greater resilience in their societies. There is no shortage of ideas from civil society and financial institutions about how to build a stronger post-pandemic economy. As Africans, we are used to being adaptive and innovative, often driven by necessity, and we do have an indefatigable capacity to stand on our own feet," writes Alain Trudain, executive director of Good Governance Africa. "With the coronavirus exposing weak governance in Africa, its people are also tapping their strength to fix it." That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thank you for joining us today. Please come back tomorrow when our Sarah Miller Yana looks at how past crises have brought not only challenges, but also change and fresh hopes, and what this crisis might bring. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how letting God's limitless love fill her thoughts uplifted her viewpoint in powerful ways that also brought healing. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jessica Mendoza and Jeff Turton.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor, copyright 2020.